Good morning, and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 63rd episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you are tuning in for the first time, Fiber Hooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else that I think is interesting. I want to make sure that I thank the good folks over at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiber Hooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeKnitting.com, your source for great knitting patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to AllFreeKnitting.com to get in on the fun. I want to welcome the new listeners today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it. I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiber Hooligan listeners. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. We do have another sponsor for today's show. Our show today is also brought to you by Leisure Arts. LeisureArts.com is your online source for top-notch patterns and books. If you like crochet, knitting, quilting, fun kids crafts, and more, visit their online web store today, LeisureArts.com. That's LeisureArts.com. Okay, my guest today is the dynamic and savvy president of Skasell Collection, Inc. The Skasell Collection has been supporting local yarn shops as a wholesaler of high-end yarns and needles for over 27 years. Skasell is the sole North American distributor for the Addy Turbo line of hand-knitting needles and accessories, as well as Zitron, Shulana, Haiku, Artfelt, and Shopple yarn lines. As a family-owned and operated entity, they strive to provide top-notch customer service, world-class products, and cutting-edge designs. My guest has been involved in the artistic crafts industry her entire life. Prior to taking over Skasell, she taught classes in glass fusing and lamp work, clothing design, sewing, knitting, crochet, and pottery painting. She is also the leading authority on Artfelt in North America. She was the first to experiment with this paper and through trial and error has discovered many amazing possibilities using the paper as a base for felting. She is currently working on an Artfelt book and has been teaching classes and doing demonstrations throughout the United States. Although her resume and credentials are impressive, it doesn't do justice to this remarkable and generous lady who does so much to support the entire fiber arts industry. I am speaking, of course, of my very good friend, the very talented Karin Skasell. Karin joins us this morning from Kent, Washington. Good morning, Karin, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Benjamin. Good morning.
Well, how are you doing? How is Kent today?
Kent is actually sunny today, amazingly enough. I mean, we've had a beautiful, beautiful summer, and then Labor Day weekend has been all rainy, but today I see sunshine, so it's nice. It's a beautiful morning.
Well, that's great to hear. So thank you for joining us on the show. I know that you're a very busy person, and I know that we've had to postpone. I do appreciate your patience while that happened. I just had internet problems here, and unfortunately in this digital age, without the internet, I can't do almost anything. You probably find that yourself.
Oh, yeah, all the time, but that's not a problem. Actually, this morning works great, so.
Well, that's great. All right, well, let's get right into the interview today because I can't wait to share you with the Fiber Hooligans. So I'm going to ask you a fairly boilerplate question, and you can give us as short or as long an answer as you want. Karin Skasell, who are you and where did you come from?
Well, I am the daughter of two immigrants from Germany who ventured over here from Volkswagen. My father had a job with Volkswagen. He came over here many years ago, actually back in 59. And there are two entrepreneurs who have had many different businesses and ended up in the yarn industry. And I happened to be their daughter and happened to purchase their business back in 2006. So I know that was a really quick answer, wasn't it?
It's totally fine. Don't worry about that.
But you don't want to hear the whole family story. But that's basically who I am. I'm someone who was lucky enough to have parents that had a business in an industry that I absolutely adore. So it worked out really well.
Well, it did, and the industry is better off for having you in it. Now, you and I have talked about this before, and Alexi once wrote an article about it. You and I have had very similar paths with our companies. I believe that you and I both came back to our companies right almost in the same year or darn close and took over. And I know that, just like me, you worked in your family business when you were younger as well.
I did. Actually, my parents started the business back in 85. So by that time, I was actually already married and on my way to having kids. But back in 93, I believe, I started joining them working in the offices and actually cleaning toilets and doing whatever could be done and answering phones and doing sales, and started going to TNNA shows. And actually, I think I went to the first or second Stitches. What year was that? Was that like in 93 or 4 or something? Or was it?
I think that might have been 92, yeah.
Okay, well, then maybe it wasn't the first one. But it was one of the first ones that I did go to. And I remember that dearly because I had a really great time. And from then on, I worked actually in my parents' business all the way up to the year 2000. And in the year 2000, my husband actually got transferred to the other opposite side of our state here. And so I went along with my husband and my family and sort of left the family business and very much wanted to actually open a yarn shop over there in the Tri-Cities, over in the Kennewick area. And unfortunately, there was a lot of shops. There was actually 3 yarn shops, and they only had a population of about 120,000 then. So that was plenty of really good yarn shops for that area. So I ended up opening a pottery shop, which was really interesting and a lot of fun. But then 4 or 5 years later, my parents said they were going to retire. And I was like, oh, I was a little surprised, actually. But in that they had found a buyer for the business. And I was like, well, no, you can't sell the business to someone else. I said, I'd like to buy it. If you're going to sell, I'll buy into it. So I convinced them to hold off for a few years and that I would buy into it when my daughter graduated from high school, which was in 2006. And so I did that in 2006. I moved back to Kent over here, the Seattle area, and bought my parents' business. And lo and behold, when I went to the next TNNA, who was there? You. And you were back too.
I was back too, yes. And it was an interesting year. It was right around the same time that I believe that Rob from Cascade also jumped back into the fray.
He did. And someone else did too.
It was Colinette's kid.
Oh, Colinette's kid. That's right. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a big year for a lot of new blood in the industry. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. And it was.
Or I guess recycled blood, right?
Recycled blood. But it was also an interesting year because I don't know about you guys, but for us, it was the first year or the second year, I guess, after the yarn boom. We hear fondly in our offices refer to it as the scarf era, where everybody wanted to make a scarf, and so many businesses came to be between 2000 and 2005, and sales just skyrocketed. I mean, we couldn't keep yarn in stock here. So, I mean, they were consistently out. No one could keep up with the inventory, and then all of a sudden, in like 2006, it started going down again a little bit, at least. We weren't growing like we were. So I don't know if your company did the same thing. I mean, did you not notice that peak?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, for us, of course, it translates into a trickle-down effect. Not so much with the shows. The shows are a little but when it comes to the magazine, of course, all magazines are advertiser-driven, and there was just a lot of yarn companies that didn't have as much cash on hand, so there was definitely an advertiser crunch for sure. And at the same time, we saw shops having trouble. One of the first things that shops tend to do when they have trouble is stop buying books, and that's a major piece of our business. So we absolutely saw it. Yeah, we had to slim down a little bit, get back to fighting weight, and do what we needed to do.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting time to come in. And to this day, I really sort of regret having missed the years between 2000 and 2005. So I just get to hear stories about them.
Yes. You know, I was always in town during, again, what we call the scarf era days, when, honestly, we couldn't keep up track, and nobody could keep track of how much money was coming in. I mean, that was just kind of the way it was back then. And so I was always around, and I always consulted, just like you. It's hard when you have a small family business, as you know, to ever be completely out of it. Even when you're not into it, you're sitting with the folks, and they probably asked you questions like they asked me questions. Hey, what do you think about this? They, you know, that's just the kind of the way that shop talk evolves within a family dynamic.
Well, and I still did a lot of designing while I was gone. I don't think I ever quit designing, so I've always liked to design. That's fun.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about your creativity, because you've done actually a lot of different things. You know, you have always been an artistic person, and I'm going to use the term always involved in what would be called traditionally arts and crafts, and I know that you don't have a problem with that name.
No.
But you've done a lot of different things, from paperwork and glass and painting and knitting. You've done a lot of different things.
I have. It's sort of embarrassing how many things I've done. But I think you'll find that with a lot of knitters, even per se. They tend to do a lot of different types of crafts within our textile industry, whether it be sewing, which I've done a lot of sewing. And actually, I think sewing is the thing I've probably done most in my life. When I was in college, I sewed wedding dresses to help make extra money. And when I was 10, my mother made me go to sewing classes, and I fell in love. So I started sewing all my own clothes. And although I knew how to knit and I knew how to crochet, I think that was probably my favorite thing to do when I was in my teen years. I didn't start knitting again probably till I was in my younger... Oh, I guess I was in college when I started picking up wool again. I took a trip to Europe, and my grandmother got me back into it. So I started knitting quite a bit back then. But I have done knitting, sewing, crocheting, embroidery. Had a big embroidery phase where everything I owned was embroidered. And when I moved to the Tri-Cities, that was between 2000 and 2006, I really got into the pottery. As a matter of fact, I opened my pottery shop, and I'd never fired a kiln until the day I opened it. So it was a little scary. But I managed to do it, and then I started going into glass fusing and lamp working while I was out there, too. So one thing led to another, and I've also done woodworking and wood finishing and love redoing houses. Anything that your hands can craft, I love to do.
You've always been that kind of creative person. I mean, unlike, you know, I was a weaver, and that was about the only thing that I ever did. You know, can I knit? Yes, not well. Can I crochet? I keep forgetting, and somebody has to keep telling me how to do that. But I was never really creative. I was always more, you know, PR sales kind of guy. I always admired you folks that actually had creative ability.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's something to be admired. For me, sometimes it's a little bit of a, not a drawback, but it's a hindrance, because I like to be creative, and when I don't get my creativity in, I get a little grouchy, and trying to run the company and so on, sometimes I need to do more administrative than I really care to do. So I do have a couple of great people working for me, actually a lot of great people working for me, who really help out with that. But it is a bit of a hindrance when, you know, quite honestly, I would love to stay home all day and create some glass and do some knitting and crochet. And, you know, I still do knit every single day, but not nearly as much as I'd like to.
Well, that was one of the things, for Fiber Hooligans that may not know this, Karin was part of our opening day presentation at Stitches Midwest, and it was a great presentation. It was four different disciplines that were combining a panel approach. I won't go into it much, but I remember one of the things that we were talking about, I think it was the breakfast before we actually all got up on stage and did the whole thing, was that you said that, again, much of your day is full of administration, and you don't get to be creative and do things like this. And it's shocking to me, because you're so good at it. I mean, you're such a creative person, and you're such a good presenter.
You are so nice and so kind, Benjamin. I need you around me all the time. it's just one of those things. If you would have asked me, you know, 20 years ago if I would be running a business like this, I wouldn't have dreamed of it. It just never occurred to me that I would actually run the business. So it's surprising to me, too. But I seem to do a pretty good job at it, and I think maybe it is partially because I do have the creative side to it, and I understand what knitters want and crocheters want and all these fiber enthusiasts want. So, and of course, I learned all the administrative things from my parents, like I'm sure you did. I mean, when your topic at the dinner table every night is business, it's like going to business school. I mean, you learn a lot.
Yeah, certainly do. And I know that, you know, your company, of course, is a stalwart in the industry. People talk about your company all the while. So you came into what I consider a very strong company, and you went in a lot of different directions. You expanded. For our Fiber Hooligan audience that doesn't know maybe everything about your company, let's go in through it a little bit. Let's start with your needles. You're so well known for your needles. Of course, I'm talking about the Addy Turbo line that you are the North American distributor for. Let's talk about the needles.
Okay, well, we are. That was one of the first lines that my parents took on when they started the company. They've had it since 1987, and my mother actually, it's an interesting story, she actually had a little dream about these needles. She had seen them at a store in Germany, and she was with her mother, and her mother said, oh, don't buy needles. I have plenty of needles at home. And so my mother didn't buy the needles, and she went home that night, but for some reason she had a dream about this needle flying through the air. And next day she said she had to go back, and she bought this needle, and she took it home and started knitting with it, and she was in heaven and just loved the knitting process so much better. So my mother, being a very innovative person and always taking action on things, found out where the factory was, and it was only an hour and a half away from where her mother lived. So she called the company and asked if she could come on over, and they said sure. And she met Thomas Selter, who happens to be sixth generation of the Addy family over there. And she said, I'd like to take your needles to the USA. And from there on out, I mean, the whole story, it just grows. I mean, he said, sure. And she brought him to the States and had some troubles at first. Let's put very few people knew how to knit in the round. And most people assumed that if you knit with a circular needle, you had to knit always in a complete circle. In other words, you had to knit the sweater totally in the round. They didn't really realize that you could knit back and forth on circular needles and knit a flat piece. So my mother started showing all the shop owners how to do this when they would come to TNNA, and she gave away free needles for years. And it took a couple of years before they finally caught on, but once they caught on, they really caught on. And because they were truly the best needle that was on the market at the time, I wouldn't say we had a monopoly. I mean, there was a couple of other brands out there, but they really had nothing that was comparable to the Addy. So when the scarf boom came in 2000, my parents were in a very, very good position with their company and did tremendously fabulous needle sales and became extremely well-known between 2000 and 2005. So that was the needle history. Since then, when I came on, I wanted to see a sharper tip. So we brought out the lace needles, and we've brought out several other products since then, our latest being the Rockets, which are the lace needles that have a nickel-plated tip. Because originally the lace needles were just the hollow brass. When we had done our test with our sample knitters, who were all lace knitters, they all said that they liked the brass finish because it had more of a bite than the turbo finish. And that was great for some lace knitters, but it wasn't great for everybody. And so we realized we needed to have them nickel-plated too. So that now is the Rockets. So now we have the turbos, the bamboos, which are called the Naturas, the lace needles, and the Rockets. So we've gone from one kind to four kinds.
Well, I think it's really interesting as I look at the way the evolution of your needles has gone, because we're talking about some of the most popular needles around, certainly an industry standard. And yet, despite that success, you are always innovating and listening to your customers and adapting and making things better.
Well, that is true. I do listen to customers a lot because without customers, my theory is we are absolutely nobody. So when the customers tell us they want a sharper tip or a shorter tip or a longer cord or whatever it is, we try to work with them and do the best we can to improve the needles. And I think there's always room for improvement. And because of technology, too, because of the way different things are done, one improvement that you can't see is the way we're doing our nickel plating. Now, I will say the factory in Germany has always been very conscientious with their nickel plating, and they're extremely environmentally friendly, and absolutely no toxins go out into the rivers, which happens frequently in other countries where there is no control. So they're very, very particular about that, but they just invested another, I think it's $250,000 in machinery to make it even safer and to make sure that all the waste, because there is some waste that comes out of nickel plating, that it's all, well taken care of and it's all done in a safe manner and everything. So they're very conscientious about that, and that is an improvement that nobody sees, but it's happening. It's just one of those things that needs to be done, but no one really knows about it.
Well, it's well, now they do.
Well, I don't know if people find that kind of information boring. I mean, I always find it intriguing to know, what's going on behind the scenes. I love going to factories and seeing how they make things and why they do things, because there's always a story behind everything and why it's done.
I think you're right about that, and I actually think that people are interested in the behind the scenes stuff. At least I would hope that my show, which is mostly about inside stories, is so the, hopefully these the listeners will like that. Now, the gentleman you referred to before, is he the same gentleman that you brought over to Stitches Midwest about 3 or 4 years ago, Mr. Addy?
Yes, Mr. Addy. He loves being called Mr. Addy. Yes, it is. His name is Thomas Selter, and like I said, he's sixth generation of his company, which is located in Altona, Germany, and it's basically been in the same spot. They've, made the buildings larger, and he just recently bought another building, but they've basically been in the same spot in this town since I think it's 1856. So his grandfather, actually, whose name was Adolf, which was not exactly the most popular name at that point, and I'm sure you can understand why. His mother nicknamed him Addie, and that is how the Addie name came around. So the Addie name has not been around the whole time. It actually just came about around 65 years ago. And but that's how it came, was from his grandfather, whose name was Adolf, and his nickname was Addie. So that's a little bit of history that people are usually interested in. But he now has his daughter, whose name is Caroline. Oh, I'm sorry, wrong daughter. He has four daughters, actually. And Caroline is one of his daughters, one of the youngest. She is going to start in the company, but it's his daughter Anna who is actually going to be taking over from him. And she just came into the company last year. She has been working for some other large companies over in Europe doing marketing and so on, not related to our industry. So she comes with experience and knowledge of working for large corporations and hopes to take the Addy Company into the new millennium. Well, no, I can we say millennium, or is that no? That's in the year 2020, right?
I think we're okay with it. I think the Fiberhooligans will forgive us on that. It's totally fine. The reason I brought it up is I had a chance to speak with Mr. Addy, and one of the things I just like their sensibilities. He was talking about his understanding of how many hours that a hand knitter sits and knits, and realizing that that many hours—that's a profession. I mean, it is. You're putting in a ton of hours on that, and the philosophy was to create a professional tool for essentially a hobby that puts in as much hours that is a profession. And I never heard it said like that, but that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, no, that's very, very true. I mean, and that's actually, they have a campaign, or their campaign in Europe has always been for the profi, which sort of means for the professional. It doesn't really translate over here as well. They use the word profi sometimes lightly over there for somebody who does something a lot. But so therefore it didn't translate. But yes, he does. He pays close attention to that, and he does consider the amount of time that us knitters put into a project. Just a tremendous amount that should be, he says, to treat your hands luxuriously if you're going to be spending so much time with them. So that's his theory. And unfortunately, he doesn't knit. He knows how, and I have pictures of him knitting, but he doesn't knit a lot. He doesn't sit down and actually knit a sweater or something.
He and I are in the same boat. I know how, and there are pictures of me doing it, but I just don't do it. You know, unlike you and our offices, I know that your office is the same as mine. You can't do a meeting without somebody knitting, right?
No, everybody here knits. Everybody. Even our shippers knit. I mean, it's not even something that's required when we hire you, but it just naturally happens that these people come in and, you know, one person's knitting in the lunchroom and, you know, everybody starts teaching you, and before you know it, you just know how to knit and you're a great knitter. And they all love knitting. It's really great. There's quite a few weavers too, and spinners, and we've got a very, very creative office, a lot of felters. It's a fun thing. It's fun to come to work, and people are always bringing in and showing. It's sort of like a show and tell. See what I made? So, and actually, we have our newest Magalog that's coming out, which is sort of our half magazine catalog that we just print with our Scassell products, is almost all the patterns in there are all by employees. That's pretty amazing. Even our shipping department is
saved. That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. So let's talk about your other products too, in case there is a yarn that you distribute or that you make yourself that the Fiber Hooligans don't know about. Let's go through your yarn line a little bit. Talk about some of the classics and some of the more notable yarns.
Sure. The yarns that we actually distribute are the Schulana line, which comes from Switzerland and is a very trendy, high-end line. We also distribute the Zitron line, and Zitron probably specializes the most in being organic and earth-friendly. So he's very conscientious about that. All the yarns that he produces have the highest Ecotex rating, which I'm not sure if all you readers know what that is, but it's OEKO-TEX, and it actually is an environmental standard. So he has the highest ratings on those. That's very important to him, and he's best known probably for his trekking, which I think people have been using for many, many years. And then Shuppel is probably best known for Zauberball, which some people pronounce Zuberball, which is also a sock yarn. And, of course, we've been known for sock yarns for quite a while, I will say. But we also have our own line now, which is called the Haiku line.
That's what I wanted to get to next, was your own line. And
yeah. And
I just think this is a great thing. You know, times have changed. I remember being with you back in when socks were hot. Of course, we did the big Think Outside the Socks contest, and you guys dominated. You were so well known in the sock market. That market has changed, and you and I have talked about the nature of how that's changed.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you're great at is being flexible and saying, okay, well, things have changed. What do we do now? And this new yarn line is very exciting, and so I'd like to spend a little time talking about your new yarn line.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it is. We came out with the Haiku line, I would have to say, more out of need than anything else. So only because we needed some yarns that the market was asking for that we weren't getting from our distributors. And when it came to sock yarns too, which used to be a huge, huge part of our sales, we were having less and less sales as there were more and more smaller places. The indie dyers were coming out with their yarns. And don't get me wrong, I'm not angry about that. I'm actually very happy about that because I believe that America needs more entrepreneurs and small businesses and everything. And so I'm very happy for them and that they are doing so well, but it did take a big chunk of our business. So we needed to somehow make that up. And so that's where we came out with the Haiku line. And our first yarn was actually it was called Simplicity, which is a machine wash, tumble dry, merino and acrylic blend, which was very interesting. I really wanted a merino and acrylic and could not find any of my manufacturers in Europe who were willing to mix merino and acrylic because they said it was sort of like an oxymoron. And but I knew what I wanted. I wanted the merino because I knew it was going to be soft, and I wanted some acrylic and nylon because I wanted it strong and washable and machine dryable and to hold its shape, and finally found a fantastic manufacturer actually in Taiwan who made it for us, and he did a great job. And we started out with 25 colors, and I think now we're up to 60. So that was back in 2008. And in the meantime, we've added, I think we have 13 yarns in that line now, one of them being a sock yarn called Kobasi, which is our woolless sock yarn, which was, we had a lot of customers saying, you know, okay, so there's lots of sock yarns now for us to choose from besides yours, but nobody has anything that doesn't have wool in it that is actually decent and will stay on your foot. So we started putting our heads together and came up with a yarn, a blend, which is a combination of cotton and bamboo and silk and elastic so that it stays on your foot. And we've done really well with that. That's another one I think we're up to like 40 or 50 colors on, some multis and some solids and so on. So we've just sort of listened to what our shops are saying, you know, we need this or we want that or, you know, nobody has this, somebody discontinued that. And we try to fill in the niches and go in that direction and have done a pretty good job doing that. And we've done really well with the Haiku line. It's very well received, and we try to keep the price point great too, which is easier to do when it's not another middleman. So,
I was going to say, yeah, that's got to be one of the nice things about not being a distributor, one less person in the middle of that. And, of course, right. There's more risk. Of course there's more risk, but yeah. You've always been a risk taker.
Well, that I am. I do like to take risks, and I do like to get the adrenaline going a little bit. So, I mean, you do have to order a heck of a lot more, you know, when you've got to get, you know, 100 kilos, which is 200 bags of a certain color, rather than ordering 10. You need a lot more warehouse space, too. So, but it's worth it. It's really great. I think the yarns that we have come out with, I think we've had one major flop in the Haiku line. You're going to have a flop now and then. You just can't help it. So, and I think if you don't have enough flops, you're not trying hard enough. I don't know if that's true, but we keep coming out with new yarns that are by the request of what the people are wanting.
Sure. And you spend a lot of time out there in the world. I mean, you and your crew go to a lot of consumer shows. You and your crew talk to a lot of shops. I mean, you're really pretty omnipresent out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, the consumer shows are fantastic. And so we do support a lot of consumer shows. And we always try to have one of us, you know, at the actual show. So that, you know, we actually don't sell. I mean, we've only sold at one show. We don't sell. We just go there to listen. And sometimes we'll hang out, you know, hand out samples or our magalogs or whatever. But we're there to listen and hear what people are saying, to hear what are they knitting with and what do they want to knit with and what direction are they going. And it's just a really interesting thing to talk to the end consumer. If we were just to sit in our offices all day, the only thing that we hear from the end consumer is, in general, when you have a problem, as you know, people are more apt to send you an email if they have a problem than if they find your piece or your product fantastic. And we do get some of those emails too, and those are just always a pleasure to get. But in general, if people are going to contact you, it's because they have a problem. So when we go to the shows, because they don't have to take the time to do anything, we do hear a lot of good things too, and that's really nice. So it's a little boost for us too. It's a little ego boost at the same time.
Well, you're doing a good job of that. I mean, of course, you've been coming to the shows. Your company's been coming to the shows forever. You've been coming to the shows certainly since you've taken over sponsoring the shows. And we're not the only ones. You sponsor BK Live. You actually sponsor a lot of shows. I mean, one of the things I always give you props for is you are probably one of the most active people out there to support events or anything going on, just as a, hey, you know, we all got to get behind enthusiasm. You do a great job in that.
Well, thank you for saying that. I do try. It's so funny that you say that, though. I always feel like I'm not doing enough. I feel like we should be doing more, and I feel like I should be, you know, part of TNNA and, I don't know, run for president or whatever it is and be involved in that aspect of the community too. I just always feel like there's so much to do and I can't do it all, but I guess that's why we end up doing the shows, because it's a good way for us to participate I really feel like the shows are a great thing. I know I'm not everyone in the industry feels that way, and maybe not at least retailers, I think, but I think that the enthusiasm that these shows bring boosts up sales wherever that you go. People want to knit more, and when we all get together and we all talk, we all get enthusiastic and we all go home, and when we go home, we buy more because we're ready to do more, and we're just excited. It just builds up an energy in us when we come back from a show. I don't care which show you go to, you can't help but come back just fully energized and ready to go.
Well, and so Farber Hooligans, I'm going to take you through exactly what somebody like Karin and her gang will do at a show. She'll come in as a sponsor, and she'll set up a display booth, but she'll also work with the vendors on the floor to make sure that they have product and they have informational materials, and she'll, you know, help them with pattern support. So she's there supporting them, but she's also putting in garments into the fashion show, professionally done garments that then the yarn and the kits can be sold at her vendors on the floor. She does a lot of that kind of a thing. She goes in and she raises the Skasell flag for needles, yarn, pattern support, and just general creativity, and helps her shops be successful. And again, just in such enthusiasm and creativity that it is infectious. It's one of the things you do very well.
Well, thank you. You know what? You just gave me an idea. When you said we raised the Skasell flag, I think we need a Skasell flag. I think we need an actual flag. Yeah. Okay, sorry, I get off tandem here.
It's okay. You're gonna have to art felt it. And there, did you see that, folks? That was just this not very good segue into the next thing that I wanted to talk about. So I want to talk about art felt, and I have to confess, you've had art felt for a while, and it wasn't until Midwest when I got to see you do your thing with it that I became finally just enamored with it, totally enamored. And yes, folks, I said totally, get over it. But I really did. This is a very interesting thing, and it's very different. So I'm going to ask you to, for the Farber Hooligans that don't know a lot about this, give them a background about where art felt came from and how it works. Let's do that first.
Sure. Art felt is actually a method of felting, for those who don't know. Similar to, you have needle felting, and you have wet felting, and you have fulling, which is knitting and throwing the washing machine. Art felt is actually a technique. And it was actually, now I'm using the word actually all the time, it was created by Gerhard Schöppel. He is the one who came up with the Zauber Ball. His children were doing a lot of felting in school, and they were doing a lot of wet felting and needle felting. They were going to Waldorf schools in Germany. And he said, there's got to be a better way for people to felt that's maybe quicker, not quite as messy, doesn't take as much room, because wet felting takes an awful lot of space. And so he set his mind to coming up with a better way, and he sure did it. He created a paper, which is more like a pellon. So it's like a woven starch is sort of what it is. And not really woven, pressed, I should say, that holds the roving in place while it's wet in your dryer. And it's the tumbling action in the dryer, not the heat, that is actually felting your piece. So it's totally different than any other method of felting out there. And just to give you like a quick rundown on how it would be done is, you would take your roving, which is basically your yarn that has not been spun. You take your roving and you lay it out on your paper. You use a felting needle, which is a needle that has tiny little barbs at the end, sort of like a fishing hook, and you tack that roving onto the paper so that it is stuck. It's being held onto the paper with little tufts of roving on the backside. Then you get it wet, and you use a piece of plastic to roll it up. And I've got really good videos online at itsartfelt.com on how to do this. So it's a little hard to explain, but you roll it up into a little Tootsie Roll shape, and then you put it in like a knee-high stocking, tie a knot in it, and put it in your dryer. And then while it's in your dryer tumbling around, and doing the felting portion, which normally with wet felting, you have a lot of energy that you have to use because you have to roll it yourself. So I always say go get a beer or a glass of wine and just let it sit in your dryer. And then when you take it out, it's all done. And all you need to do is dissolve the paper, which is done with boiling water. So it's a very quick method. And, yeah, it's been around, I think, in 2006 was when I first started working with it. So we did a lot of work with it, I believe, in 2007, 8, and 9, and then we sort of let it go to the back burner for a while until this year when Chuck, who does my new product development, said, we've got to light a fire under this again. So we created a whole new series of kits, and this time around, instead of waiting for me to finish writing this book that I've been writing for 6 years, we decided to take everything that I'd written so far and put it on the internet on our website. Plus, we have videotapes, probably 40 of them, all the different projects that we have in our kits from start to finish. So people can see how it's done, and it's a little bit easier than having to explain it. And we realize that all shops can't have classes in it. They can't teach everything all at once, and not everyone can come take my classes at Stitches either. So it really helps, and that is what we're doing right now with the Art Felt.
Well, you know, the thing I was so impressed about was how easy it is and what it takes. You know, very much more simple than wet felting. Aside from the paper and the roving, everybody has what they need essentially in their house, which is, you know, some space on the floor and a dryer. And I love that because, you know, felting can get messy otherwise. And this sounds very cool. But I was so impressed about how fast you could create so much fabric. I thought that was amazing. Yep.
You can. And, you know, you said space on the floor. You really don't need space on the floor. That's the nice thing with this method, is that if you have a table where you can allow yourself maybe 3 feet by 3 feet of space, you can actually do full-length scarves in that tiny little area because you can roll it up while you're working on it, unlike wet felting where it needs to be all rolled out one length and so on. And you can work on it from day to day. You could take a whole year to put one of these together if you wanted to, even though, you know, technically you could get it done in an hour and get it in your dryer that quick. So it allows people to do a lot of things that they haven't been able to do in the past. It's also really great for detail work. And since you're creating your felting on a paper, if you were to do, say, vertical stripes or something, you would have vertical stripes on both sides. You wouldn't have it just on one side. So it gives you a two-sided object, which is pretty darn cool. And there's so many fun things that you can do with it. I've been having a great time felting again. We actually have a whole felting station set up here now in our office with our little portable dryer that we took over to Stitches. And so anytime during the day, I can just run back there and do some felting, which is nice.
Yeah, I wanna. In case you fiber hooligans missed that, yes, when Karen travels, she travels with a portable dryer. Okay, and that's not weird. We're not judging at all, Karin. We're not judging at all. I just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah, it's a fun little dryer, though. I would not want to do my laundry in there. It would take far too long. But for the Art Felt, it's fantastic. So
it's pretty great. So you taught for us at Stitches Midwest, of course. And how did your classes go? I think people loved it.
I think everyone had a really great time. There was a lot of people who said they want to do more and more and more. And we had a lot of people go home with some very nice, beautiful things. So I do believe everyone had a great time, and a lot of them were asking if I was going to be teaching more, and they wanted to try out other things. So I thought it was quite a success.
I think so, too. I think that the opening day presentation really helped because the pieces you did for opening day and then how they were adapted, it was very compelling.
Oh, well, thank you. That, you know what, that was such a fun project to do. And the other ladies who did it with me were just amazing as well. So I really had a wonderful time with them. It was really a great experience. So I don't think it was just one piece. It was all of them together were fabulous.
Well, again, I think part of the reason it was so great is just there was the mixing around of them. There was just a lot of interplay that you guys, there was surprise interplay, the way we call it, the wild card factor. But we won't get back into that. Yeah. We had Jenny on earlier, and she told us all about that. So let's talk about the other piece of business that is going on. Because you didn't have enough going on with needles and felting and yarn and new yarn, you decided to go into retail. What were you thinking, Karen? What was going on there?
Well, you sound like my parents.
I'm sorry.
They were the same way. They were like, what are you thinking? And you know what? They're absolutely right. Wholesale is a lot easier than retail. But what I was thinking was to create a community is what I really wanted, a place where all different kinds of textile fiber artists could come and get together and buy supplies and interchange ideas and sit down and work with each other. So I opened a shop that's not too far from my offices here, which makes it easy for me to get down there and so on. And we have 6,000 square feet down there, so we have a lot of sales space, we have lots of classrooms, and we have a very large lounge area, which we are really fortunate to have my daughter, who at the same time that I was putting this together had decided to become a gluten-free baker. So she has opened a full bakery within the shop and espresso stand and everything. So not only can you come down there and work on your projects, but you can also get some phenomenal baked goods. And don't let the word gluten-free throw you off. This stuff is so fantastic. And get a nice cup of coffee or tea or Italian soda, whatever it is that you like to drink, and sit down and have a great time. And Saturday mornings they serve breakfast, and it's great. You see all these people coming in, and I'm starting to see some of the husbands who come in because we don't have internet access in our sitting room, in our lounge area, and I do that on purpose because I don't want people sitting there trying to do their work or whatever. Some of the men are starting to knit, because they don't know what else to do while their wives are there and they eat breakfast because they come down for breakfast. So it's really great. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it is, and I have not been there yet. I've got to get down there. I can't believe I haven't been there yet. I've been remiss. For Fiber Hooligans, I didn't say the name of the place. The place is called Maker's Mercantile, and everybody talks about it. They rave about this place. There's plenty of product on the wall, so you can get things. And I think it's nice that you did this. I know that, again, you didn't need one more thing, but, we're going through a time in our industry where shops are closing, and you had, I think, two or three shops in your area close.
Five.
Oh my!
In our area.
It's been a rough time, and the idea behind this is to create a community center where creativity happens. I had the Stevens on, Stephen B and Stephen West, and they of course raved about your place and doing a class in there and just everything that they could do and you could get exposed to.
Well, they were a lot of fun to have down there too. I will say it's nice having access to all these fabulous people in our industry through SCASEL. It makes it easier for me to get them to come down to our shop. We have Franklin Habit, who you had, at Stitches, and he came out last year, and he's coming back again. He's actually staying with me right now, and he'll be teaching at our shop over the weekend and giving some of his lectures, which are fantastic. So it's nice. I just love the way when fiber artists come together. They are such a fun, great bunch of people that it's always a pleasure.
I got to get out there. I got to get out there.
You are invited anytime, and you can stay with me too.
Okay.
So
I might take you up on that.
Let me know when you're coming out.
I've got to get out there.
You can stay at.
I mean, yeah. I almost came out to jump on an airplane with you, but I didn't.
I know, and when you come out, I would like you to jump out of an airplane with me. That's my invitation,
okay.
My treat.
All right.
And we'll knit as we go down.
We'll knit as we go down. I don't think I want to be falling toward the ground with anything sharp in my hand. It just sounds like a bad idea. It really does. But
we'll get blunt needles.
We'll get blunt needles. Okay.
Yeah, crochet hook. We can crochet. How's that?
I'll do that. Because I'm trying the whole crochet, or as Jenny King calls it, crochet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Chris.
I'm really intrigued. I'm really intrigued by it. And of course, you know, Drew Imborski, the crochet dude, has been trying to get me to sit still long enough to teach me for a long time. So it's all on me. But so folks, Karen was celebrating a birthday, and she kind of challenged a whole bunch of us, you know, to come out and go skydiving for her birthday. And as I understand it, nobody said yes.
You're the only one who said that you would come, as far as within our industry. I had plenty of, you know, people back home here, but you are the only person out of our industry said, yeah, I'll do it. So, unfortunately, it didn't work out. I wasn't able to rent the whole field. So, actually, my goal was to have 50 jumpers on my 50th birthday, and it didn't work out. But since you were the only one who actually said he'd do it, it's my treat. You come out, we'll go jumping.
All right. Well, I'll have a few beers first, and that'll be just fine.
I suggest you have them afterwards.
Oh, right. You know, thinking about that, that's probably a better idea. But but I'm also really looking forward to seeing the Maker's Mercantile, you know, because I know a little bit about the whole gluten-free process. To be a gluten-free bakery, I mean, is a tricky thing. That's not just like putting an oven in or something like that. There's a lot of work that goes into that.
Well, yeah, there's an awful lot of test baking that she does. And so I must say, over the last couple of years, the pounds are creeping up on me. I just keep eating all this stuff. So it's hard to leave there without eating something. And it smells so good. I mean, it's a really nice yarn job to go into because the smell is so phenomenal. But she's doing great. The bakery is doing great, and the shop is doing very well. And we have, on top of our yarns, we also have some cottons, fabrics. Some linen blends, and we also have some embroidery supplies. We have a phenomenal button selection. I do believe we probably have the best selection of Addies in the United States, and I guess you could probably figure out why.
You know somebody, I imagine, yeah.
I hate to say that. I mean, we do have a little benefit there. So we have a huge wall of Addies. I think it's 22 feet long or something, all covered in Addies. And then we have felting supplies and of course, all the little knickknacks that come along with knitting and crocheting and weaving. We have some looms, and we're starting to do some weaving classes. So any kind of fiber textile art is what we're going for.
And if they want to find you, the Maker's Mercantile online, it's makersmercantile.com, correct?
It is. Yep, makersmercantile.com.
And Tammy will be putting links in for Artfelt, Skasell Collection, and Maker's Mercantile when we're all done with this show in our Ravelry board.
Okay.
So,
fantastic.
she's just great about that kind of stuff. So I'd like to talk about something that's over now, but I understand it's gearing up. It was truly fascinating last year to watch, and that, of course, is the Fiber Factor. Very exciting, very ambitious. I mean, you took that whole concept of the TV show, and you turned it into a pretty comprehensive and complex thing that you had a lot of decent participation for. You brought everything into it. It was just very exciting. For the fiber hooligans that may have just joined the industry and may not know about this, can you kind of take us through your idea for that?
Sure. What we did was, we have a whole bunch of people here who watch Project Runway. And we were always talking that we have got to do something like this for knitters, and I think we said it for 5 years in a row. And finally, one year, Chuck Wilmesher, he came to me, I guess it was a year and a half ago, and he said, Karen, he goes, let's do this. He goes, I'll handle all the small details. You just make sure and get it funded and so on. And I said, sure, let's go for it. So I was very fortunate to have Chuck on board, because I would have to say Chuck was our producer, and he did all the hard work, the organizing and all of that. But what we did is we put out a call for designers, and we had over 100, I think it was 103, who actually applied to be part of this reality show contest. And I was a little surprised. You know, I was like, okay, 103 people tried out. I thought, not so good. Let's aim for like maybe 1,000 next time. Only to find out that, did you know on Project Runway they only have like 350 people who try out? So
I
was pleasantly surprised. I was like, well, if they only have 350 and so on, and you know, we had 103, I was pretty impressed. So maybe my ambitious side of having 1,000 is too high. We'll see. But out of the 103, we narrowed it down to 12, and we had 12 contestants that ranged anywhere from the ages of 21 all the way up into the higher 50s. We had 2 men and 10 women, and we had a knitter that had been knitting for like 6 years and a knitter that had been knitting for like 40. I'm sorry, 6 years, 6 months. I should take that back, 6 months. So we had a really big range, and what we did is we had 6 different challenges, and each challenge was based on something slightly different, where either they all had to use the same yarn and came up, you know, with a pattern that was supposed to be the new It pattern, or on some of them they had to incorporate different materials. When we had an art felt challenge as well, which was really interesting. That was to create a piece of art out of art felt, and we actually held the finale of that one at Stephen B's shop in, where is he, Minneapolis. And he, of course, does everything very elaborately, and so it was a phenomenal place for us to actually have that one. We had a full runway fashion show and everything. It was really great. So we had all these different challenges, and then at the end we narrowed it down to what was supposed to be 3, but we narrowed it down to 4 because we just couldn't narrow it down to 3. And they actually had a final challenge, of which we were lucky enough to pick the winner in New York City. We flew them all to New York City. We actually had a phenomenal room right over Times Square. It was really a lot of fun, where we had the finale and we got to see their final pieces, which we put in a runway show at Vogue Knitting Live last January. And we picked the winner, who happened to be Lauren Riker. She's a young woman from New York City, and she won a trip to Europe to visit some of our factories. We took her over there for 7 days to visit with our vendors and so on. So it was a really interesting, great, fun experience. We had so many people in the industry who were so kind enough to be judges for us, ranging anywhere from, you know, designers like, you know, Stephen and Franklin. And then, of course, we had Elaine from your company, and we had Rick Mondragon, and we had, you know, Trish Malcolm from Vogue. We had Kat Bordy and Lucy Neatby, and I mean, the list goes on, and they were all so kind. They all did this as a courtesy to us. You know, it was just, they did it on their own. They weren't paid for it or anything, and they just all participated, and we had a great time. So we skipped a year, which is this year, and we're going to go for it next year. We're going to start taking applications in January again.
Great. That's what I wanted to get to. So, you know, I know that you were thinking about doing things slightly differently this year. And you want to tell us about your plans this year?
Sure. We are going to do it slightly differently. We are going to be eliminating either 1 or 2 people every single challenge. And we are also going to be, I mean, we don't televise. We actually put the videos up online, but we're going to be doing those on a regular basis. Meaning, for instance, it used to be that they were very, very sporadic, but for instance, this next time around, it will be like the 2nd and the 4th Tuesday of every month at 7 o'clock p.m. we'll upload the videos so that you'll know exactly when it comes up and when you can actually watch it. And we will start again with 12 people and probably with 4 people, but like I said, every single challenge we have, we'll eliminate somebody, just sort of like they do in the real reality shows. And we will also, I think we're working on doing a more professional taping by doing most of the tapings here on our premises, rather than, we took the tapings out onto the road a lot and had a hard time with different surroundings, making sure that we got the sound right or the background right or this or that, because we do have a budget that we need to work within. So people were very kind. For instance, when we did one of our judgings at Stitches, you guys provided us a room, and we had that with other shows and other people, and we were able to have celebrities, knitting celebrities more, because they tend to be brought to the shows. So that worked out really well, but we felt the quality of our videos wasn't so good when we did that. So that part we're still working on.
I thought they were very good, but I love the idea that more consistency, because yeah. I, as somebody that puts a show on it every week, I know that when I skip shows, people get, you know, they tend to lose interest, or they tend to forget about it and they go on to other things. So that consistency is really important. I think that's great, and it'll just generate more buzz and more buzz, and it'll be great. And I like the idea that it's maybe just a little more competitive. I like the idea that you're cutting somebody, at least one person per episode.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, we were talking about it. Had we done that the original round, I mean, one of the people who made it to the final four wouldn't even have made it, because they wouldn't have made the first round. So in a way, it's sort of odd that something like that would happen. I mean, if you think about it, because they clearly ended up being very talented, but their first piece was just really awful. So it will make it more competitive. I think it will make people think a little bit harder about what they are doing, because they can be eliminated. It'll be a little bit more stressful on the contestants, and I think it was stressful enough as it was, but that's part of it. It's a competition.
Right. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I loved about what you did before, it wasn't all about just creation. There was a segment in it where there was about presentation. It was about finishing. It was about explaining. It was about photography. It was about, okay, if you're going to be a professional designer, here are the other things that you need to do to be successful, you know, when you're dealing with somebody that you're selling it to. And you got into those things, which I thought was really, really interesting. Again, you know, coming as into it, looking at it as a publisher, I just thought that was really useful to see.
Yeah, well, you know, in our industry, you can't just design. You've got to be able to write a pattern, and you've got to be able to take pictures of your things and post them on Ravelry or wherever it is, and you've got to be able to take a good shot so that people want it. And I mean, we're not just designers in this industry. When we design, we have to wear a hat of many different types. we try to show that to them, it was very interesting to see how they responded to it. So,
well, I can't wait for it. So when are submissions coming up? When should people be looking to start submitting?
We're going to be announcing the submissions at TNNA in January. We're really trying to get our shops more involved this time. And so we will be announcing in January at TNNA. And at that time, it will also be on thefiberfactor.com. We'll put it up there at the same time, and we'll probably be accepting admissions for 2 months.
Very cool. I'm really looking forward to that. last year I got into it a little late, but I did kind of catch up. I didn't watch all the videos, but I watched a lot of the videos. It's just very exciting stuff. And I'm glad somebody's doing this. Again, this is one of those things, folks, where Karin is really very much a good steward of the industry, trying to figure out, okay, what can be done that's fun and then adds enthusiasm. It's something that you excel in, Karin.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and like I said, I need you at home. I just need you to, you know, maybe you could just do a recording for me that I wake up to every morning.
I'm happy to do that for you. You know, and it's funny, you and I don't speak on the phone. In fact, I don't think Karin ever speaks this much on the phone.
No, I don't. I usually don't speak this much, but that's okay.
That's okay. All right, so I know that... not you, but some of your folks are joining us for Stitches East here in October. Where can we find you or the gang in the next couple of months?
Well, we will have a booth at Stitches East, and Jody will actually be there, and she'll be handing out free magalogs, and she'll also be handing out prizes to anyone who wears something made out of our yarn to our booth, so you might want to keep that in mind. And I do believe that is the only other show that we are doing this year. Then we skip off to January, and in January we will be doing Vogue Knitting Live from, I believe it's the 15th through the 18th, and I will be teaching Art Felt at that as well. And then, of course, we will have a booth at Stitches in February down in Santa Clara. And that is, I believe, is that the 23rd, 24th? You have those dates. Sorry. It's so funny. That's one date I didn't write down.
It's okay.
So, yeah, so we will have a booth there, and once more we'll be handing out our Magalogs and giving prizes to anyone who comes to our booth with Scacell product on. And then I'm hoping that at Stitches South in Nashville, which I'm really looking forward to, that I'll get to teach Art Felt again there, and I believe that is April 23rd through 26th. So, yeah, and we are at every single Stitches show. You know, come hell or high water, we are there. So.
You've always been such great supporters, and we've always appreciated it. You bring so much, enthusiasm and professional wares. I know that our attendees appreciate it as well.
Well, good. We like being there. And this last couple of times, we've actually given needles and yarn for the beginning knitting booth, and it's been really fun. We have people come by and they say, "Look what I made in class." And it's really exciting to see people learning.
It is. You know, again, you guys are always like that. I remember, I think it was our first or second South, you guys had brand new lace needles, and so you had some needles that were lace point on one side and regular on the other, and you were just giving them out to everybody. You know, hey, try this, take a look at the tips and things like that. You guys are really good about, you know, doing that kind of thing. And I always applaud that, because I've got to believe that engenders loyalty for both your consumers and your shops.
Well, the reason we did it was so people could try them. I mean, I don't think loyalty crossed my mind on that one, but, you know, it gave people the opportunity to try it. How else are they going to try it? You know, it's sort of like handing out free yogurt when you came out with a new yogurt. I know that's a bad example, but it's... I always keep seeing yogurt people on the corners lately. I don't know why. Everybody has a new Greek yogurt. But, you can't, sorry about that. That's really going off on it here. But
that's great. I love it.
It's one of those things, though. If people can't try it, you know, it's a lot of money to invest. And you want to try it first. So, and we're confident that once they try it, they're going to like it. So it really paid off to do that.
Again, you're fearless. One of the things I really always admired about you. All right, well, we're coming down here close to the end of the show, and I wanted to make sure that I gave you a chance. Are there any shout-outs that you'd like to make out to the world on the program today?
Oh, you know what? There would be a million shout-outs that I'd want to do, so I'm going to really narrow it down. So one is my husband of nearly 30 years. We've been dating 34. So love of my life, sweetheart, and he puts up with me all the time, even though I'm hardly ever home and there's yarn all over the place and he goes to bed with knitting needles stabbing in his back, and he puts up with me all the time. I love him dearly. So that's to Doug Hack. Thank you for being with me. And then I have to give a shout-out to my two right-hand men here, who are Chuck Wilmisher and Rob Delmont, because without them, I wouldn't be able to do half the things that I could do here. And, of course, all the employees that we have here, I mean, without them, I'm nobody. And same thing with down at Makers. If I didn't have people managing the place and so on, I wouldn't be able to do any of this. And last but not least, I told you I'd go on forever. It's the end consumer. It's the people who are listening, because without you guys, we are nobody. So when you have things that you want, ideas that you want to see done, you know, drop us an email. I'm sure you're going to have our websites up, right?
You betcha we will.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, without the knitters and the crocheters and everybody who's out there and the felters, we're out of a job, and then we can't do what we love. So thank you.
Those are great answers. Very gracious of you. And no, you didn't go on too long. It was perfect. All right. We're coming up to the very last question. I gave you fair warning about it. I give fair warning to all my guests. Do you have any final words of advice that you'd like to give the Fiber Hooligan audience today?
I would say just keep doing what you're doing and just keep being creative. Short and sweet.
Well, that's perfect. It's perfect. I love it. Okay. Well, great. I want to thank you for being so gracious with your time and for allowing me to share you and your story with the Fiber Hooligan listeners. And I want to wish you a great week. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, Benjamin. It was fun.
Bye. That was Karin Skissel from Skissel Collection, Inc. You can find out more about their yarns, needles, art felt, and everything else that they're doing online at skisselknitting.com. And that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Okay, you know what time it is.
And now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Rivalry Group, and administrator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about cool. You?
Not so bad. This whole taking 2 weeks off and then doing a show and then taking another week off and doing a show, I miss talking to you, but, you know, it's also kind of nice to have, you know, a little time off too and be able to reflect. And so, yeah, you know, how are you doing? You getting any knitting done?
A little bit. Cool. I'm working.
Cool.
End of summer.
I know. It's happening too quickly.
It is.
Yeah, all my kids are back in school. Oh, well, I guess that's life, right?
Are they teaching you anything?
I've been learning from my kids since they were 2 years old, I guarantee you. You know,
yeah.
It's my kids teach me something every day, thank goodness. But anyway, Karin, what do you think? Awesome, huh?
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to learning more from her.
She's so smart. She's so creative. It's wonderful. She's got such a great optimistic take on everything. I just, you know, I've known her for years. I should have had her on the show months and months ago. I don't know what took me so long.
Well, it's probably more like you guys are both busy. So thank you for this opportunity. That worked out really well.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, she's pretty great. So what else is going on in your world?
Well, it doesn't feel like summer's over yet, but it, you know, this is early September. It doesn't really hit that it's ending for another few weeks, like 3 or 4 weeks. So,
yeah,
I'm sure it's different a little bit in South Dakota.
Yeah, it's not bad here at all. No, it's not bad here at all. Okay, well, let's get right into this. I always look forward to your report. So what do you have for us this week?
There's a couple of articles that I wanted to share. There was one that was published, let's see, the London Times. Yes, the Financial Times Limited in London. This was about fiber businesses, and it kind of really expressed how important, it's kind of a love-hate relationship that businesses have to have with the internet. It's featured a shop called Loop in North London, and she shared with this article that about 25% of her business is done online. Probably about a third of her customer base is online. So that kind of impressed me that it was, you know, in order to make a success of their business, it was important to have an online relationship and a good website. At least for her, that was important. They also talked about the textile industry, that the majority of the textile industries in the UK are considered micro businesses. It also had a kind of a unique concept with a company called Wool and the Gang, which offers kits of their yarn to people to create garments, and then it will sell the garments that are made by its customers, which was kind of an interesting idea, I thought. They also featured a magazine called Pom Pom, which is a knitting and fashion quarterly that covers embroidery and crochet. That it talked about a lot of its customer base was with digital printing of its magazine because people don't want to ruin their good copy, hard copies, which I thought was interesting too, because I know that carting around my knitting projects, the magazine always gets mangled. So I thought that was an interesting article, that it was as if this is all being discovered. And here in America, that seems to be commonplace for most people, most companies and yarn shops, and that are online.
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, and it's so interesting, that balance you walk between the brick and mortar and doing the online thing and understanding where your customers are and which customers get preference. And the answer is no customers get preference. They all get attention. And it's so hard to allocate resources. And so many small businesses, they're just not technocrats. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to get it done. It's a hard gig. I really think so. I mean, it's hard enough to get that done. And then everybody seems like it seems like what people are saying is that in order to be successful, then you also have to be an expert in social media. I take exception to that, and I don't want to get into that right now, but it's a hard gig. It's a hard gig. It's hard enough to show up every day and lock the doors and keep a good store and then to do everything else. I think it's a hard gig.
I understand that it's hard. I think, and Ravelry was mentioned in this article. The magazine that I mentioned does all of its advertising in Ravelry, which may be a little bit narrow because not everybody's in Ravelry, but I find that it's really interesting when people have fiber businesses that they're not updating their customer base through that medium, not just Ravelry, but online. You know, Facebook may be a way to go, or Instagram or Pinterest or Twitter, just letting people know that, hey, we got new stock in today, come and check it out. So a lot of products that are out there are people are so familiar with that they don't have to be in your shop to want to purchase, you know. So keeping everybody updated on your stock and your product is pretty interesting. You know, here's an avenue that sometimes doesn't cost you anything. You know, hopefully people will use it more. The other article that I thought was pretty amazing, this came out the day we came home from Stitches Midwest. In Australia is an event called Anzac Day. There's a lady that her father was a veteran, and she decided she wanted to knit a few poppies to decorate a certain area of Federation Square. So she started with just wanting to knit like 500 poppies. And these are the big, like 6-inch round oriental poppies. So she's decided she's going to knit a few of those. She gets a few people in her yarn shop involved. She ups that goal to 1,200, makes that goal. The word gets out, and suddenly she's up to 30,000 poppies to decorate this one square for their holiday that's coming up. And they actually have the 100th anniversary, Anzac Day. The number of poppies that she's got coming in, if you could see the pictures from this article, it's immense. I mean, to go from 500 to 30,000 was just really impressive. And, you know, I was impressed with this work being done so far away. So that was a pretty neat article. I'll have to post this for everybody to see it in Ravelry.
Well, yeah, please do post it, because it sounds very interesting and I'd like to see more about it. You have a website online, or is it came in some kind of online periodical?
When I look for pieces to share in Google, and I haven't received any suggestions from anybody lately, I start Googling knitting news, and this is one of the pieces that came up from Sydney, I believe. So, you know, it's interesting to find what's going on a world away. To me, anyway. So that's kind of why I wanted to share it. It's kind of overwhelming how many poppies that she received that were knitted by folks in her area.
Well, that's very cool. That's very cool. So anything else going on in your world that you want to talk about real quick?
September is here.
And I'm sure you've already started packing for Stitches East, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm picking out which 6 knitting projects I'm going to take.
Okay. You can't. All right. No, people, you should take knitting projects to the show. Do that. But 6? You're just going to look at 4 of them, you know?
And I might finish one.
You really won't. You really won't. There's more socializing that goes on. You know, I mean, this will be your 3rd Stitches, and you know better, you know? But you're still going to pack them, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
And this time you're going to like bring a suitcase because you know better from last time.
I do. I am also, usually my knitting projects that I carry with me are the Halos of Hope hats. At West, I finished 3 while we were there.
Oh, so. You're a good person. Thank you for doing that. You know, thank you for always supporting Halos of Hope. I know you've always got their back on that stuff, so thank you very much. And on behalf of the whole board. All right. Well, okay. So you got, that's what you got for us this weekend?
Yes.
Okay. So we will look forward to your report next week. And thank you for another great segment and happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Thanks, Tammy.
See you, Benjamin.
You take care. That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan and admin of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Revelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us on one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you may have heard on the show. Next week, my guest will be Andrea Marquis of Yarn Superhero. She is a longtime knitter, crocheter, and newly impassioned spinner. She loves to make things and grow things, and her superpowers include working with what's available, seeing the bright side, and helping people reach their next great idea. With 20 years of business-to-business sales experience, Andrea approaches the yarn business and the rest of life with an improvisational spirit. An unrepentant optimist with a weird love for spreadsheets, she is a member of the small but mighty Spinzilla Committee. Andrea will be joining us to tell us more about herself, as well as telling us all about Spinzilla. This will be a first for us Fiber Hooligans, delving into the world of spinning, and I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to have Andrea on the show so we can learn more about her and this global event that is Spinzilla. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and AllFreeKnitting.com for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stuart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank my guests, Karin Scassell, for being so gracious with their time and for being so much fun to talk to today. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. I'd like to thank Leisure Arts for sponsoring today's show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week for another edition of Fiber Hooligans.